So, Uli Steck was one of the most accomplished climbers in history, nicknamed the Swiss Machine. Steck's achievements in mountaineering are many, though he would be best remembered for his solo speed ascent of the Eiger's North Face in 2015. The North Face of the Eiger shoots up 13,000 feet in the sky like a dagger of limestone and ice. It's a classic symbol of the Swiss Alps, and also the perils that can accompany the sport of mountaineering. Having claimed the lives of more than 60 men, 60 climbers to date, the North Face is so dangerous that it's sometimes called the Mordwand. That's German for death wall. Typically, the North Face is the most dangerous because there's no sun on the North Face, so you have more ice and more snow. It's often easier to go up the South Face or the West Face. There's less ice. It was first scaled in 1938 over the course of 3 days, securing the climbers who achieved it, Heinrich, Heckmeyer, Fritz, and Vorg, a place in the history books of modern mountaineering. In November 2015, professional climber Uli Steck turned the sport on its head when all alone, solo, with no ropes, and only equipped with crampons and his two ice axes, he scaled the entire North Face in 2 hours and 22 minutes, setting a record for the fastest time ever. So the first time was 3 days. Many years later, just over 2 hours. He had an acclaimed career with successful ascents of all 82 13,000 plus foot peaks in the Alps in just 62 days that same year. This is a feat that takes a lot of guys their entire climbing career, 20, 30 years. I would note that his partner also died on this trip on the last climb, which is a fate that many of his climbing colleagues met over the course of his career. Steck was a legend of the fast and light school of alpinism, which is a practice of in which climbers minimize their gear loads in order to reach summits as quickly as possible. Instead of taking a tent and a sleeping bag and staying for 3 days or 3 weeks, they just go for it without all the heavy gear. He also twice received the Piolet d'Or Award, mountaineering's highest accolade, and this is all from an article by Jake Semier in Gear Patrol. So I've given you a little brief description of him, but they say a picture is worth 1,000 words, a short video is worth 10,000. So I want to show you a short video just to show the magnitude and scale of what he's doing. This is climbing the North Face of the Eiger.
That was for me the day where I decided, I might have to go back and maybe try to get my record back, because Danny Arnold climbed it in 2 hours 28 minutes. In 2008, I free climbed the whole face, and I didn't have like any tracks in the face. That was my goal, to climbing like that, and it was a huge effort. And this time, I was just curious to see, in this kind of conditions, and also pulling the gear like everybody else does, what time I can do like in a safe way. I remember like in 2008 when I free climbed it and breaking the trail, I had like my maximum heart rate was about 190, and this time I would consider I was never higher than 165, so it means there is a huge progress now. you go fastest up there, it's like, I mean, of course, that feels really, really good. But we have to be honest, like, these records, they're like, climbing is not a competition, and it's so many other, like, factors who count, like conditions, temperature, weather, and being like 6 minutes faster than Danny, I think that's nothing. It's like, that's not a big step. I think the fact is, like, it will be climbed in under 2 hours very soon. So I think,
I don't know about you, but that's an inspiring video to me. I was inspired by a lot of his stuff as a teenager. So I got into some alpine climbing in my teen years, in my 20s, even a little bit in my 30s. I can't say that I speed climbed without a rope. And I would take a route like that. It would take me 10 times the time frame to do it. 14,000 foot mountains. What he's doing is with no rope, with no training partners, that kind of speed is really inhuman. He had an acclaimed career with successful ascents of all, again, I already read that, I'm sorry. So Uli was known for his obsessive training, right? And focus on the next accomplishment. He was an exceptional rock climber, mountain biker, ultra runner, skier, alpinist, and all around mountaineer, because there's all different types of mountaineering. There's the rock climbing, then there's alpine climbing, which is a lot of rock, and then you got the Everest type climbs, which is just a lot of glaciers and ice, just a slog. And he would do like Everest with no oxygen, which is also inhuman. He was basically a human goat with incredible cardio. To put this all into context, everything he's doing would be very hard if you had a team of 2 to 5 men and you took several days or even weeks for some of these trips. And he's doing a lot of them by himself with no ropes. It's just unimaginable. So he preferred, you know, the mountains with the ice and the glaciers and the snow and the wind and all the extreme temperatures. And imagine the speed at which he's moving it at 12,000, 13,000 feet. It's very hard to breathe at that range. At that range, I could only ever move just one step at a time. It's like the oxygen's really thin at that altitude. So I didn't just find a video off the internet to show. I really relate to this. And I would ask you, how would you feel if you would accomplish this great feat in your life? If you had been to this pinnacle, to the top of the world, literally the top of the physical world, and set all these speed records, how would it make you feel? I would feel elated, because the guy he had a wonderful wife at home. He was worth millions of dollars at this point from the fame and the fortune. Every, you know, pub or restaurant he goes to there in Switzerland, people know who he is. But I want to show you a short little video to show you how he actually felt.
We're here in the beautiful village of Riggenberg, high above Interlaken, to meet the Swiss machine, Uli Steck. The cowbells are ringing, it's all feeling very Swiss, so let's go and see what the man himself's got to say. Uli.
Hey, Charlie.
How are you doing?
Good, you?
It's an awesome office.
Yeah, it's not too bad. You want to have a coffee and then
this
we
place.
Sit outside?
Cool.
Let's go outside and sit in the sun. It's still nice and sunny, huh?
It's coffee, Uli.
It's very important to have good coffee in life. That keeps your engine running, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You take the machine to base camp?
Yeah. No, I always bring a mocha in base camp.
Oh, sure, man. So you've been back a couple of weeks now. When you reflect on the route, how do you feel about it?
It was a big game for me. It was a big dream. Like, the first time I tried it 5 years ago, and now I climbed it, and you realize nothing changes, you know?
Yeah.
Life is moving on, and I just climbed it, but I feel kind of, like, empty.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because I guess if you've got a dream for a long time, particularly if you've been, this is your third attempt, right?
Yes.
Do you feel empty now? Do you feel satisfied? I mean, is it happiness? Is it relief? What's the main emotion?
The main emotion right now is empty.
Emptiness,
yeah.
About Annapurna or about climbing?
Yeah, about whole thing, about whole life, you know. I was so driven for climbing that in the last, I mean, after I returned from Everest, there was just Annapurna. I really want to climb that. And now I climbed it, and yeah, what's now? It's.
Was it better when you hadn't done it, and it was still there?
Maybe, because you still had something that drives you, you know, like something you can try to catch.
Yeah.
And right now, this is gone.
What's interesting as well is you were planning to climb with a partner, but you soloed the route.
So, that's the last video I'll show. But was anyone else surprised by this response? Anyone? I was. I was surprised to see this response because I've summited a few number of mountains and felt elation afterwards, and it lasted for weeks, you know. You have memories, you have something to look forward to go back and do it again or find a new one. So I was really surprised by his response. But this was a fairly common cycle for him. When he would first finish, he would feel elated and he'd feel this high, but eventually he would come down and feel empty, like a lack of purpose. His purpose, his obsession had been accomplished, and he's left feeling empty in the end. So this is not just a common cycle for Uli Steck. I've found through the years and through reading, it's a fairly common cycle for humans. Setting goals or creating distractions of some kind to build and give purpose to our lives, and then once they're attained, there may be initial feeling of a high, but eventually left feeling empty inside or even depressed. So why is this? Well, you could spend a lot of time looking into the whys. Today I want to talk about a little bit about the purpose for mankind and our purpose in this life. So my first question should be, how do most people try to achieve purpose in their life today? No, not in the church, just in society. You all could answer this question. You'll see the first subpoint I'll mention is the pursuit of accomplishments. And under that subtitle, pursuit of accomplishments, I could say this could include many things. Success in career, in sports, in school, in hobbies, all kinds of things. And it's certainly not wrong to try to achieve things in your life, by no means. I 100% encourage all of us, especially the young people, to try to achieve high marks in school and do good in your jobs. And all these things are good things. And I'm still incredibly impressed with what Uli Steck did with his life in that, you know, all the stuff he climbed by the age of 40. It was incredible. But without, you know, he didn't have the knowledge of God, and without his priorities being straight, it ultimately led to an empty outcome. So how is this possible? Again, I said he had a wonderful wife, he was worth millions of dollars, fame and fortune, you know, human mountain goat. The guy was well known everywhere he went, but he lacked meaning, and he ultimately lost faith in humanity. He mentioned that on multiple occasions. So this concept of feeling empty or lacking purpose, it's been proven time and time again by examples of various people. Who remembers Robin Williams? A lot of the kids won't know Robin Williams, but he was a comedian, very talented comedian and actor. Sadly, committed suicide. You would imagine, how could a guy so funny and seemingly on the outside so full of happiness and laughter end up committing suicide? Another one would be Steve Martin. You know, he's an older comedian and actor. Steve Martin, at the height of his career, said he was the most depressed. I can mention famous boxers like, does anyone here know who Tyson Fury is? Nobody? One guy? A few guys? Tyson Fury is named after Mike Tyson, except he's about a whole foot taller. He's 6'9" instead of 5'9", and he's the current heavyweight champion of the world. It's pretty unusual to see a guy that's 6'9" that can bob and weave like Tyson Fury. Well, the basic story of Tyson Fury is he eventually beat the Klitschko brother, I think back in 2015 or so. And after this incredible career, once he won the heavyweight title of the world, he just fell into the deepest depression. And it lasted for a couple of years, became suicidal. He got up to about 400 pounds. And it wasn't until he sort of found God in his own way. I mean, there are a lot of Baptists and Protestants out there that at least there is some good in finding, having some belief in God. But he found God, so to speak. He didn't join the church by any means, but let's just say he cleaned up his lifestyle, which was not a good lifestyle. He was partying a lot and quite depressed. And that's when he came back, and no one could believe he could lose 150 pounds and come back and beat Deontay Wilder three times, but he did. But without something to live for, he was some kind of purpose, he was totally lost. I could name more examples. We know people, I've known billionaires that were depressed, lacking purpose, that would try veganism or Buddhism or fighting climate change or whatever it is they could find to try to find meaning or purpose in their life. And that's very common to do when you really don't know what's going to happen when you die, and when you don't have a firm understanding of the nature of God and what our purpose here is. So without real spiritual purpose, without knowing where they go when they die, these folks, without a relationship with God, they're often left feeling empty. And the momentum of their achievements, which will last for a while, sometimes 20, 30, 40, 50 years, it doesn't fill them up in the long run like they believe it will. That's why people, as they get older, they start questioning the future of their life. Many even report the worst depression again after achieving the goal they worked so hard for because they don't know what to do next. Anyone remember Buster Douglas? He was the first man to defeat Mike Tyson. He's on top of the world, and after that, he just fell off the cliff. Extreme depression. I don't even know if he ever fought again after that. Jordan Peterson mentions this even happens in academia. We got a couple of guys that might know something about that. You might work on your PhD for, I don't know, a decade out of high school, and you can work years and years and years towards this goal, and be very happy in the process. And upon achieving it, surprised to find out that you don't always continue to feel that same high or that deep meaning you thought you would. Again, a noble goal to get more education, to get a PhD. It's just that without the spiritual counterpart, it's not going to carry the same weight or the same meaning. So that the lesson is that the anticipation and the drive and the hustle of success in whatever form that may be in your life, in school, in music, in sports, in your career, winning the lottery, whatever it is, whatever event that it is that activates that part of the brain that's exciting and rewarding, it can be very stimulating, but it can be more stimulating than the actual reward itself. So my second sub-point would be the pursuit of happiness. I think Dr. Ross gave a message on this concept, or at least he mentioned the movie a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago. But the pursuit of happiness alone is something, you see a lot of people pursuing happiness, right? It's all over Facebook and Instagram, and you see it in society, you see it in movies. But the pursuit of happiness alone is a fleeting and pointless attempt by itself, because life is suffering. There's a lot of suffering in this life. The storms of life will come and take away your happiness. So happiness, or I'd say joy, happiness is more of a feeling, a current state, rather than sustaining value and purpose. It's different than joy. A quote from Albert Einstein. He said, "A life directed chiefly towards the fulfillment of personal desires, will sooner or later always lead to bitter disappointment." I'll repeat that. A life directed chiefly towards the fulfillment of personal desires will sooner or later always lead to bitter disappointment. And the reason is, like I said, life is often full of suffering. And that's no matter your socioeconomic status, no matter how rich you are, how poor you are, no matter your race, what nation you're from. Everyone eventually experiences many types of suffering, whether it's the death of a loved one, so grief, maybe poverty, maybe depression, or sickness. It's all going to come on us or someone that we know that's very close to us at some point in our life. And that can really rock your whole bubble, your whole world. I think everyone thought, 2 years ago, life was clipping along pretty good, and then COVID hits, and that produced a lot of changes for a lot of people across the whole world. So in the absence of true religion, many are searching for deep meaning in their lives. Like they pick a hill to die on, or a flag to bear, or a cause to believe in. I see this in society, and I see it sometimes in my friends or that maybe decide to leave the church. They leave the church, and then maybe what they were focusing on while they were here in the church for 10 or 20 years or 30 years, they have to find something else to fill that void that they've created. And so that I've seen it take many different forms to different people. And I see that, I've seen that search in people with large amounts of money. It tends to be a higher search because they have, at some point, more options in life, more time, eventually more. If you're worth hundreds of millions or billions, eventually, and you retire, you sell your company. Let's say you're 35, you sell your company for 1.2 billion. Now you got all this time on your hands, and you got options in life. You have time though to think about your future, where you were in a rat race before. And so I've seen these kind of folks maybe take on veganism, you know. Not that eating vegetables is wrong, but people get religious about it. They try Buddhism, veganism, starting foundations and charities, whatever, fighting climate change, all kinds of things to make them feel a sense of purpose in this life. And these do fill some vacuum of purpose, but one that was created for God to fill. And again, these approaches, they'll get you fairly far in this life. And some of them will give you a sense of purpose that can carry you for a while. But ultimately, these physical paths lack spiritual meaning. And the proof of this is in the fruits. Our society in general increasingly is becoming more medicated, over-medicated. I heard a stat the other day that there was 30 million subscriptions of Adderall out there. So if I just do some quick math, there's 330 million people in America. That's roughly 10%. But it's not the really young and the really old that are doing it. It's the, I would imagine, you know, age 15 to 40. So that could be as high as 20% of the population on Adderall. It's a little crazy. But our society is over-medicated, increasingly anxious. A lot of people have reported feeling anxious, especially since the whole pandemic situation has turned the economy on its head. You've got inflation out of control, but generally lacking meaning or purpose. So I think as a nation, we've probably never been more lost or divided and hopeless for the future. People are uncertain about what the future holds. I don't think we are in this room. We know that as things continue to fall apart in society, that God's plan is just coming together. So we have that confidence and that faith. Let me use another biblical example. Solomon. Solomon was likely the richest man in history. And he was given untold amounts of wisdom and wealth. At the end of his life, which he eventually filled with hedonistic pursuits of pleasure and happiness, he shares in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 14. He says, Ecclesiastes 1, verse 14, "I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind." So he tried everything available to him to make him feel happy or full, but along the way he drifted from God and worshiped false gods. You all know the story of Solomon. It didn't work for him. So my second major point is, what did God intend to be the purpose of man? What did God intend to be the purpose of man? Well, God is our creator, and he made humans for a reason, and he wants us to live out our lives fulfilling that reason or that purpose. The Apostle Paul wrote about that purpose in 1 John 3, verse 1. "Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us, that we should be called children of God, beloved now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him. For we shall see him as he is, and everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. So the purpose God gave us is to make us sons and daughters, and to ultimately become like him. Which is an awesome purpose, to be children of God and live with our Creator in his perfect kingdom. A perfect kingdom on this earth with Satan bound, absent of all the negative influences we see in the world today. My third point is, how do we fulfill the purpose God gave us today in this world? How do we fulfill the purpose God gave us? Let's turn to the passage in 1 John 3:3. And everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. This means that to fulfill God's purpose, you must do something. To become pure is to become Christ-like, free from sin and full of good works. It requires action on our parts. If you want to read a book about action on our parts, James is probably the best book to read. So it's the concept of faith without works is dead. So to become pure is to become Christ-like, free from sin and full of good works. And I know this is a tall order, but it's worth the work we put into it. Christ outlines what this means when asked about the greatest commandment, the commands for how God intends his people to live in the two great commandments, which we now summarize, you know, it basically summarizes the Ten Commandments. And we all know these. What are the two great commandments? Number one is to love God, right? And number two is to love others. But this is not a passive feeling, this is an act. It's not something you can do just, you know, on an island by yourself. It's an act. We have to come together in fellowship, be a light in our communities. We have to demonstrate this love. We must train and put our bodies and minds into submission to accomplish this. Uli Steck, you know, did an extreme amount of training and endurance training, strength training, skill training. He was running, you might say, for a perishable crown, to have the fastest speed record on this mountain and that mountain. Obviously, we're not doing that, but we are training for an imperishable crown. So, a lot of this doesn't come naturally because we're physical, we're human. But we know we're to love God first, and second, to love our neighbor, to love others and serve them. And some people are harder to love than others. Just ask my wife. I don't think she's in here. She's out with the baby. By the way, this is our first time. Did I mention that? First time back with the baby. So returning to King Solomon, at the end of his opulent life, that true purpose in this life is found in Ecclesiastes 12. And I'm starting to wrap this up. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13 through 14. To fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. This is our primary purpose. If Uli Steck had been called halfway through his climbing career, and he made this his number one goal, he could still keep climbing, and he wouldn't feel so empty inside. He would have hope beyond every summit that he climbs. There'd be additional meaning in his life when he goes home to sleep in his own bed and wake up and see the sun the next day. Like he wouldn't be so pessimistic towards humanity. He really lost faith in humanity is what happened. Fourth point is, what should living God's purpose produce in our life? Well, it should produce the fruits of the Spirit, but specifically peace. Philippians 4:6, the Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything. Instead, in every situation with prayer and petition with thanksgiving, tell your requests to God, and the peace that surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So in a world where everything is appearing to spiral out of control, and people are feeling very anxious, we as Christians in this room, we need to have peace and confidence and faith towards the future, that God is going to work everything out in his time, in his prophetic march. Continued spiritual growth will produce confidence in God, also known as faith, a hope for the future, and a longing to be part of God's family. So if you're a teenager or a young person and you don't necessarily feel this yet, maybe you're new to the church, you can look at some of the older people in church that are older now or maybe have passed away and look at their example. We've had a lot of people come and go that maybe had a lot of trials, maybe they had a rough latter half of their life. I've seen many people go to the grave with cancer and various diseases, still having faith in God that they're going to wake up in the resurrection with peace in their heart and confidence and faith in God. And that's a beautiful thing to see. Because I can't say that I feel that right now. I'm not ready to die. But when you see someone at the end of their life that's literally ready to die and they're at peace with it, it's an amazing thing to see. And it takes a lifetime of prayer and study and fellowship to achieve that level of peace in your life, I think. So letting God's purpose for us be our number one priority in this life is the only way we're going to get out of this crazy mixed up world alive. I know Elon Musk is trying to build a colony on Mars. That's his game plan, but that's not going to get him out alive. Christ is the door. He's the door. He's the only way through. Currently, Satan's the god of this world. He's roaming to and fro. You can see his fingerprints everywhere, his handiwork. This is not ultimately the world we want to be a part of. If we want to be a part of God's kingdom when Christ comes down to reign, we need to understand and be excited about pursuing God's purpose for our life and in our lives. In conclusion, this is everyone's favorite part. In conclusion, in 2017, Uli Steck set out to accomplish another climbing route in the Himalayas, where many climbers do. It's on the border of Nepal, near Everest. A goal he'd been working on mentally and physically to achieve for some time. While he was acclimatizing means you go up, you come down, you're trying to get your body used to the elevation, because it's basically the death zone. Once you go above 20,000 feet, your body is dying. You get pulmonary edema and all kinds of health problems. A lot of people just can't go beyond about 15,000. Sadly, Uli fell over 3,000 feet to his death, never to reach the peak. And while this wasn't a shock for me, it was very sad. I would say half of the climbers that I followed growing up are now dead. There's an expression that you'll know a lot of old climbers and a lot of bold climbers, but you won't meet a lot of old and bold climbers. I got a chance to meet Fred Becky climbing in Arizona one time. He was like 80, still alive. I met Yvon Chouinard climbing in the Teton Range. He's the owner of Patagonia. He was probably 72 at the time. But he was an old climber, but he'd never done extremely bold things. So God has a plan for Uli, and he'll raise him up in the last great day in the resurrection. And he'll be given a chance to learn God's ways in the future, just like countless billions will as well. But right now, this is our opportunity. We're called in this life. We're called to be children, sons and daughters of God, and reign with him in his kingdom.